Bigfoot, Skunk Ape, Grassman, Sasquatch. Just a few of the names given to the primate-like creature said to roam the woods and remote areas of North America. Tales of this elusive being go back for hundreds of years. Is it mere myth and legend? Or is there truly something more tangible to this phenomena? Join us on this journey as we discuss the science behind the encounters, the research and the evidence, keeping you updated on the latest findings, ideas, and hypotheses. Arrogance gets us nowhere, and closing one's eyes doesn't make things disappear, nor less real. Today's myth could be tomorrow's reality. It's time to make this subject matter less taboo. Welcome to Monster X Radio. Bigfoot without the BS.
Okay, everybody, welcome to a special edition of On the Shoulders of Giants, Talking Old Timers with Thomas. And that would be the one, the only Thomas Steinberg. How are you, Thomas?
I'm not getting any younger, Julie, but today's your 20th show, and I guess we're going to do something special today.
Yes, we are. I can't believe it's been almost 2 years now since we started this journey. And like Thomas just said, this is our 20th episode, and we have a very, very special guest with us, and we're just so excited to have him. I wanted to give a big shout-out to Russ Accord for making the arrangements to do this show. Russ, if you're out there, thank you so much. We appreciate it so much. And let me introduce to you guys somebody that I think is very dignified and graceful for giving us his time as well, and that is Bob Gimlin. Bob Gimlin is in the house.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. So, Thomas, you know Bob on a personal level. You guys are friends.
Yes, Bob and I have been friends for quite a few years now, and Bob, I just want to let you know, when Julie says talking old-timers with Thomas, she's not really referring to your age, son. She only means that when she's referring to me.
No, she means it when she's referring to me, Thomas, because I'm older than dirt, but I can remember every damn thing.
Awesome. Now, it's really nice to have two of the last remaining, what I like to call the Squatch Fathers, and that would be the group that everybody, you know, and when this all got started, Thomas was there, Bob was there, so it's very exciting to have you two together on the show. So, Thomas, I'm going to let you go ahead and, go ahead and talk to Bob. And throw out there some questions to him, and I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this.
Roger that, Julie. Okay. Bob, my friend, I just wanted to start off, if you could in all the years, and I've asked you this question once before, and I don't know if you remember it, but in all the years that have gone by and all you've gone through, since that fateful day on October 20, 1967, is there ever a time when you regret saying those immortal words, "Sure, Roger, I'll go to California with you"?
Many, many times, Thomas. Many times.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Now, as I recall, you guys at the time got a sort of a message from John Green telling you that something had happened down in Northern California. And and I believe it was the late John Green who asked you to come down, you and Roger, to come down right away. Or was it just Roger he asked, and Roger asked you to come along?
Well, it was just Roger, and Roger asked me to take him down there.
That's right. Everything was on your dime, wasn't it? Your money, your cars, your vehicles, your horses.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Exactly. That's exactly how it was.
And you guys ended up going down there and spending about, I'd say close to 3 weeks in the general area before that fateful morning. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is very correct.
And I was wondering, Bob, you could just sort of go through the scenario for our listeners here about that morning and who did what and how you guys started off that day. I know you've told this a million times because you've told it to me at least 100
times.
Well,
yes. Yeah.
But if you could just go through the scenario as to what happened when you woke up and found Roger washing himself in the creek.
Well, yeah. You know, I got up a little earlier than Roger, and always did get up a little earlier than Roger, and saddled my horse and rode off up the creek bed there a ways, and I was gone for probably an hour and a half. I don't know, remember the exact amount of time, but it was a while because I rode quite a few miles. And when I come back, Roger, he had saddled his horse and went the other way. And so he rode in, and we had some breakfast or whatever we had to eat. I think it was probably just bananas because Roger was heavy on his bananas. And whatever I had to eat was... I never did eat a whole lot anyway, so it didn't matter much. But anyway, we talked about what we was going to do that day and the directions that we were going to travel and what to do, because we'd already been down there for 20 days. And I was kind of getting a little fatigued of what was happening because, we'd been called down there for three different sizes of footprints in the soil around a tank that was put in there on a Friday afternoon before Labor Day weekend. And when they come back on a Tuesday, there was big tracks all around this piece of equipment that it was a fuel tank that they set in there to refuel the cats and the road graders and stuff. The equipment that they were using up there trying to build some roads across the top of the mountain. And so these different sizes of footprints was the reason I went down there, because they called Roger and told him that there was footprints around it. Well, by the time we got down there, it had rained, and there had been so many people talked about it that there was human tracks all around it, and there was really nothing much that you could identify as good tracks. So we decided to stay down there and ride and just cover some miles and see if we could recover some more tracks or any evidence that we could come up with. And so on the 20th day of October 1967, we were riding up the creek bed, and we were about 4.5 miles away from where we camped, and come around a bend in the creek where there's a big downfall root system where the creek washed itself around it. And as we come around that bend in the creek, one was standing on the other side of the creek, and that's the famous footage that you see or have seen for years.
Now, you were riding a full-size horse. Roger was riding a rather small horse, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, Roger was riding, it wasn't a POA, it was a small quarter horse, and I was riding a big old rope horse, a big, big horse, 16-hand horse. And Roger's little horse was probably 13.3 or 13.4, but he was a little quarter horse kind of, crossbred quarter horse and something else, pony, I guess. I don't know.
And there was the white pack horse as well.
And, yeah, a little pony pack horse.
Correct. And at times, Roger, during this, would hand the camera off to you and you would film him.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah, and well, other times. And other times.
Well, other times. Well, Roger just say, hey, what it was the fall colors. Everything was so bright colored, you know. The foliage was colored good. And he'd say, take some pictures of all this, Bob. And we were just riding along the creek bed there. And I'd take a few pictures and hand him back. I wasn't real familiar with the camera. But he'd wind it up and say, take some pictures of me and riding along here. And the fall colors of the foliage. So then I'd hand him back the camera and he'd put it in his saddlebag, and we'd ride on a ways, and we come around this bend in the creek, and Roger was ahead of me about two or three horse lengths, and one was standing on the other side of the creek, and so Roger's horse just kind of really threw a fit, jumping around, and he finally got this camera out of the saddlebag and got off and started filming it. The horse I was riding acted up some, but I stayed on him and held him. And he was an old rope horse, so he was a little more easier to handle than Roger's horse. But Roger had already got off his horse by that time and was running across with a film where he was filming, and then he just followed it, and then he went a ways, and he realized he had to relocate to get a better picture, so he said, hey, Bob, right across the creek, he didn't say right across the creek, he just said, cover me. Well, we had rifles with us, and I rode across the creek and stepped down off my horse and had a snap in the back of my belt with a lead rope went up to the halter and snapped that in, and I just stood there and watched the thing as it walked away, and Roger hollered at me and says, I ran out of film, Bob. And I said, oh my God. And I said, well, I want to follow it. So I got back up on the horse, and he said, no, don't leave me here. He said, my horse is gone and I'm out of film. So he said, help me catch my horse up and get some more film in the camera, and then we'll follow it which way it went. I said, okay. So it took a little while to get that done. And then we went up the same canyon that the creature went up, and about a mile or so up there, we saw where there was a half of a wet footprint on a big flat rock, and then it went right on up through the cliffs, and I knew that I could climb up through there pretty good. Couldn't take a horse up through there. It was way too steep. And so Roger said, well, no, we got to get back and get some pictures of the footprints and stuff, and it's getting late in the afternoon. It was about 2:30 or 3 o'clock the time we were at this time. And so he said, let's go back and get that all done, and then we can follow up on what happens after that. And so we went back and made some casts and did some filming of the track way where I jumped off and got up on a stump and jumped off with a cowboy boot heel, and to see how deep the impression would be into the same soil as close to the track as I could. And with a cowboy boot on and riding heel, I couldn't go down. I couldn't make a deep impression as the footprint was.
Now, when Roger yelled, "Cover me," you drew your rifle, but did you aim at it or not?
No, I never did raise the rifle up. In fact, I never did crank a shell into the chamber. I just held it there in case it turned around and come after me. But it never did turn around. It just kept walking away.
Okay. Now, and other times I've heard people repeat this story. You always know that little changes get made. I just want to hear from you. Did you actually dismount and remount, or did you stay on the horse the whole time?
No, I got off the horse. I got off the horse because I knew if I had to shoot, I couldn't shoot accurate on the horse.
And you remounted after the creature had moved off in order to follow it?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to follow it. And
correct. And
Roger,
how far
Roger,
did you follow it before Roger called you back?
Well, it wasn't very far. It wasn't very far at all, because this thing kind of moved in a moon-shaped area because of the mountain on the other side. It would have had to went up on the mountain and back down again.
Roger that. So really, neither you nor Roger actually left the film site after this happened.
Oh, what was that again, Thomas?
You guys, neither one of you actually left the film site after the creature when this happened. You stayed there.
Well, we stayed there until we got through filming and casting the tracks. And,
Roger
and
that.
Then we...
That's what I was trying to clarify. You see, other people repeating your story over the years tend to throw little details in that are later on proven to be untrue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there's some I've heard it said. Other people say you aimed at it. I've even heard one person say you took a shot at it. I even heard another person say you wanted to ride up. You went riding up the mountainside. And I've known you for so long, and I knew none of that was true. I just wanted you to clarify that for the listener.
No, I never did raise the rifle to the shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
I never did crank a bullet into the chamber because I was just waiting to see what was going to happen, and it just kept walking away, and so there was no need to get serious about shooting or anything.
Roger that. Now, in the best of your memory, just describe the subject for our listeners. Like, what did you see with the naked eye?
Well, a big, hairy, covered creature.
And what color was it?
It was dark brown. And I never realized that it was a female until actually I saw it. And they said, well, it's got mammary glands. Well, it all happened so dramatically fast that I could see everything. But I just figured that this big thing that big would have a chest on it. And so, but, you know, when you're looking at something really fast and trying to cover everything and get everything for sight, it's pretty hard to take an overall picture and say those are mammary glands.
Absolutely. This is sort of like a 60-second time frame that it's sort of like dominated your life ever since, hasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely, Thomas. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And so I can remember the looks of the how it went and the, everything. But, you know, there's a certain amount of things that, that just didn't register with me at the time.
I understand that because you only have a few moments. See, I always thought you're the one that had the good look at it. Roger had to look through that horrible camera lens.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I always said, I always maintained that I seen more than Roger did. Well, I think I did. Because Roger and I compared notes afterwards and that night, laid there and talked about it until we went to sleep. But, yeah, I actually seen more than Roger did and remembered more about it. Because he was cranking the camera and moving around from one location to the other to get a better picture.
Okay, and after you were guys were looking at the tracks, I believe Roger cast two of them.
Well, I can't remember how many. Seems to me like he cast more than two, but maybe they didn't turn out as good. And he maybe only two of them turned out pretty good because
yes,
you know
it was always my understanding he cast two and it was the late Bob Timmons went down there 9 days later and cast 10 of them in a row because they were still there.
Okay.
Weather damaged a bit. Okay,
I remember that Bob Timmons went down there and did some work.
Mm-hmm. Now
but
by the time
we were,
all this came to an end, you actually went back out when it started to rain the next morning and covered them up, didn't you?
Absolutely. When it started raining, I realized that I had to get back up there. And so I went and put the saddle on my horse and rode up there. And I pulled bark off some dead trees and covered as many tracks as I could get covered up before they got washed away. And I guess it was a good thing that I did that. I was thinking, see, Roger has called the guys in Canada to bring the dogs down. Some guy up in Canada, I can't remember his name, had track dogs that would track anything. And it rained so hard that we called him, but they flew down there, but they couldn't get landed with the dogs at the little airport, so they had to go on over to Wairika or somewhere where it was a bigger airport to get landing because of mudslides and stuff that occurred after that rain. And so I never did really talk to the guys that brought the dogs down, but by the time they could get in there to where the tracks were, the dogs would not track them. They just walk out of ways and whine and come back and just wasn't interested or wasn't interested or were afraid or something.
And you guys had a hell of a time getting out of there when that rain started to come down, didn't you?
Oh, it was a nightmare. It took me all day. When I got across the creek and started up the mountain, I was sliding back. I'd loaded the horses up, and I was sliding back faster than I was going forward. So the back end of the truck,
wow,
with the ramp that lowers, lets the horses down, slid up against a tree. And I couldn't go forward, couldn't back up, couldn't do, and couldn't drop, couldn't let the horses out because the gate that let them out was up against a tree. And so I ran up the side of the mountain, and I'd remembered a backhoe sitting up there. And I got it started up with the smoke just of rolling out of it and put a bunch of rocks in the bucket and went back down and hooked onto the truck with a chain and told Roger, keep that truck in low gear and help me as much as you possibly can. This was a four-wheel drive backhoe, so I had it in four-wheel drive, and I towed him about 2 miles up the side of Onion Mountain. And when I got to the top, I unhooked from him and went across this, was going across on that new road, and I thought, well, I was having a hard time driving, or it was just lugging way down, and I told Roger, I said, step out there and see if I've got a flat tire on the outside dual. Roger stepped out, and he stepped back in. He was ghost white, and he said, Bob, don't even start to slow down. He said, the whole mountain sliding away is that dual hitting that dirt and sliding on down the mountain. He said, and I just kept on going until the floorboard was so hot I couldn't even put my foot on where the transmission was, and went ahead and got on out of there. Took me all day to make that trip, those 5 or 6 miles.
Wow.
And you finally made it back into Willow Creek where you all talked with Al Hodgson for a little while, right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And Roger made some phone calls to some different people up that he knew, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to the airfield to airship the film to the late Al Diapa.
Yes.
Was that Murray's Field where you airshipped that from?
I don't remember.
Okay. Now, and then you drove all the way back to Yakima for the first showing of the film at Al Diatley's home. And you didn't intend, because basically you did all the driving, you were exhausted.
I was exhausted. So I was asleep, and when they first showed the film, and so I had slept. I drove all the way, and only thing I'd do is when I'd stop to get gas, I'd get water for the horses, and Roger said over there sound asleep. So when we got back to Yakima, they wondered how come I wasn't there to see the film the first day.
Mm-hmm.
I was tired. I was just beat, you know. And so when I finally did show up to see the film, I said, well, that film is nothing. I saw more than that. And so I wasn't a bit impressed with the film footage.
Just to clarify, Bob, when was it that you yourself first saw the film?
What was that again, Thomas?
When was it that you actually first saw the film?
The next day.
Okay, after the first showing. Roger that. So you went there and they...
Oh, Well, yeah, John Green and Rene Duhendon had already got down there from Canada to see it before I saw it.
Roger that. And it was the next day you saw it for the first time.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. And just
and
to point out to our listeners once again that this was all on your dime, your gas, your truck, your horses, your time.
Yes,
right.
It was. It absolutely was. And you know, I should not say this about Roger because he's gone now, but that little son of a gun, he said, well, if you're going to drive back to Yakima, Bobby said, I'll spell you off. Well, he sat over there and went to sleep, and he didn't even wake up when I'd stop and get gas and water the horses. And so I thought, well, you little son of a gun, you know. But I wanted to get back up. I wanted to get back to Yakima. And so I just went ahead and drove. But I was young then, you know, and I could take a lot of punishment. And God, now I'd never be able to do it now.
Yeah, I'm sure you kind of chuckle about it now, but I'm sure you weren't chuckling at the time.
No, sir, I was not. I was terribly fatigued. And then when I got to see the film, I was disappointed in the film. I said, well, that film isn't much, you know. I mean, I saw a lot more than that. And so they said, well, God dang, you know, you're making things kind of bad for us. And I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm just telling it the way it is.
And as time went by, you sort of got frozen out of the whole thing, did you not?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I was alienated away from everything, and Roger and Al traveled with it and showed it and did things and made money, and I kept trying to get a hold of them, and they wouldn't return any calls or anything. They had an office here in Yakima, and I'd go up there and I'd say, hey, have them get a hold of me, you know. They were traveling through the United States through somewhere in the South or through the Midwest showing the film and making big bucks off of it. Well,
wow.
I thought I was entitled to some of that money, but never did happen because Al DeAtley was managing it, and they actually had a guy down in Arkansas somewhere, I think it was Little Rock, that they were showing the film, and they had a guy get up and say, I'm Bob Gimlin. He was about my size and looked somewhat like I did at that time. And so a guy that I knew that I rode horses for was a timber faller from here in Yakima. And he was back, he had a widowmaker had hit him, and he was going back down into Arkansas to recover from that. And he went, he seen that they were advertising that I would be there, so he wanted to see me and make sure, you know, and just talk to me. So he paid his money to go in and see the film, and the guy got up and said, I'm Bob Gimlin. He said, hey, you're a goddamn liar. He said, I know Bob Gimlin. You're not Bob Gimlin. And the security, they had the security throw him out.
Wow.
And he called me and told me that.
That's just mind-boggling. Do you recall, Bob, did you ever get a reason why Al DeAtley wanted you sort of frozen out of things?
What, again, say that again, Thomas.
Do you have any idea, now that time's gone by, why the late Al DeAtley wanted you frozen out of things? I assumed it was mostly his doing.
Well, yes, it was. He didn't want to share any money with anybody, you know, and he didn't want anybody to know about me as much as because I tell the truth and he'd tell a big lie about everything.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Yeah, and boy, did they ever go on for a long time. Was there not a period of time where you kind of like just tried to distance yourself from the whole matter?
Absolutely. I finally just gave up and said, hey, leave me alone.
Wow.
And how long did that last for, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it didn't last because it kept coming back and they kept wanting to know why I wasn't involved with all the money-making stuff. And I said, well, I wasn't allowed to even know what was going on because they'd travel all over the country secretly. Well, not secretly, but I had a job. I had to stay working all the time, you know, and I couldn't just quit my job and follow them around through the country, through the United States.
I understand
so
that.
So I just kind of let it go, you know.
Yeah.
Because there was no way.
As a matter of fact, when you, myself, John Green, Dmitry Baranoff, and all that drove down to Northern California for the summit in 2003, as I understand it, that was the first time that you had ever been back to the film site since that day, correct?
Absolutely, Thomas. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just never had the time. I was always busy working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, amazing. When man has to earn a living, you just can't take time off to go traipsing around all over the place. That's kind of like what you had to tell Roger the day you said, sure, Roger, I'll go to California with you.
Yeah. Well, see, Thomas, I was riding a lot of colts. At the same time, I had a steady job, and I was riding a lot of colts for people. And so I was busy, you know, on any off time I had, and weekends, well, I was riding these colts every day after I'd get off work. And just trying to make a living.
I understand, and it's been a hell of a ride, and I think we got to give a special shout-out to a certain lady named Judy. You had to put up with a lot.
Really do. You know, Judy took an awful lot of flack over this. In fact, she used to come home and bawling, and she was a teller at the Savings and Loan Institution, and she worked on the line, and they'd come in and they'd harass her at work. Well, not really harass her, because they'd make smart remarks about it, and she'd come home and say, I wish you'd have never been involved. I said, well, I wish I wouldn't have been too, but it's too late. But different ones would give me a bad time, and I just shrug it off and say, the heck with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't quite that nice about it.
Mm.
Now, Julie, do you have any questions?
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just mind-boggling when you think about, Bob, that you're the one that spent the money, you know, took the time to take him there and all that, and then you got treated like that. That's not very nice.
Well, no, it wasn't very nice. That was, Al the Atlee was telling Roger what to do and when to do it, how to do it. And he was interested in money and money only, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like that. Bob, I want to ask you, before you actually turned that corner and saw that creature standing there, did you believe that they existed?
No, sir, I did not. And the first thought I had in my mind, by golly, they do exist.
Wow.
You know, there was some thought about the expedition in 55 and 56 down there, I lost track of them. When Tom Slick put on the expedition, the multimillionaire, Texas millionaire, and died in his own plane. And
mm-hmm.
And I thought about that a lot and thought, well, they were onto something because there was quite a bunch of those guys down there that Tom Slick had in that same area looking, and Reese, Bob Titmus and Rene Duhendon and a number of guys that was on the payroll until Bob Slick died in his own plane. Tom Slick died in his own plane, and then the money quit, so they quit the expedition in 55 and 56.
Wow.
Actually, I think that Slick expedition was more 58, 59. Yeah.
Well, probably was, yeah.
That was a long time ago now. It seems like yesterday, but it was a long time ago now.
Yeah, it does, Thomas.
Yeah.
It sure enough does.
Yes, it sure does. And I bet you it just seems like going by like a snap of the finger, but when you remember back, Bob, I just want to say it was so great the way you've come through and opened up to when people want to know more information. And now you stood tall with all these people who come out with these wild, wacky theories, and you know which one I'm talking about coming out now.
Oh, boy, do I ever. Yeah.
And you maintained it, my friend, with dignity, and that's all I have to say to you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you much, because you and I have known each other for a long time, Thomas, and we've had a good friendship. So I appreciate your talking to me about this thing. And this guy, I won't mention his name, he's still bringing up that I shot and killed a bunch of them down there. And this guy's a real nut. You know who I'm talking about. I won't mention his name. He'll say anything to get a little notoriety. And
wow.
And I don't know why he hangs on to the fact that I shot and killed him, and because I mentioned the backhoe way up on the mountain to pull the truck, he thinks that it was able to get a backhoe down in there and bury them all. And, I know it's so bizarre that it just makes me sick to hear him talk about it. But anyway, the guy's a Looney Tunes.
Yeah, definitely agree with that.
Unfortunately, he's not the only one. There are other people we won't mention that are pushing it.
Absolutely, Thomas.
Well, that I'll tell you what, that your story is very intriguing, especially when you hear it directly from you. Now, back in 2015, I was at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference where you were at, and you told your story, but you put in some details today that I've never heard you talk about. So that was very informative for me, and especially about the backhoe situation. And, you know, some people may be under the false impression that, you know, you guys just kind of was roaming around and just happened to bump into this Bigfoot and, you know, filmed it and then left the film site, and it took you maybe an hour to ride out of there. And it's just, there's so much to the background of all this. And it's just amazing.
My goodness, if they'd only known what happened with the rainstorm and everything, and how the creek rose up so fast, if they'd have just even had some kind of idea what I went through that day to get out of there, you know, it was a nightmare to even try to drive out of there and get, you know, and deadhead my pickup or my truck with a backhoe up the side of Onion Mountain, and on top where they was building the new road, how it was sliding away as I was driving along the hill, along the crest of the mountain, on a new road, a new dirt road, and the whole side of the mountain was sliding away as I was pulling down on the outside dual. So, you know, nobody understands anything about that kind of deal, because it's hard to even visualize what really did happen there that day.
You know, that sounds like somebody should pick this up and make a movie out of it.
Well, let's do it.
Yes, let's do that, guys. I know a particular person that might be able to pull some strings for that.
Okay.
Right? I think you might know him too.
Yeah, I know him.
But yeah, that would make one hell of a movie, I'm telling you. Especially the part where the side of the mountain sliding off and you're trying to get out of there. That would be some awesome effects.
Boy. Yes, sir. And
but
I'll
you know,
tell
I'll tell
what.
You, it's gosh. You've told your story so many times, and people still, they love hearing every time you tell it. They want to hear it over and over, because you guys did something that nobody else has been able to do, and that's actually film it walking away, turning around, looking. I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of people to this day still believe that that is not a real Sasquatch. And what do you say to the people that are naysayers on that?
Well, I'd say you have to be there, see it, to believe it, all of it. And you can believe part of it, but you can't visualize what went on between the camera, Roger, and me at the time that we first saw it. There's no way that that person can even understand the feeling and what really happened there that day.
Amazing. Well, Thomas, did you have anything else, or?
Well, yes, of course. I'm just wondering, Bob, if it still bothers him to this day, the way he's been treated over the years, or does he feel better about it all now, or do you still find a little bit of bitterness in there, Bob?
Well, I tried to bury all of that. I figured it's not getting me anywhere. So you know, it's a sad memory. It's just a sad, sad memory. And a little bit of bitterness, but not too much, because I've kind of went past that, and I'm an old man now. So I got to forgive and forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, this much, my friend, you're leaving one hell of a legacy.
Isn't he, though?
Well, thank you.
Just very interesting that, you know, that you, here you were a non-believer, you turn that corner, and boom, your whole life changes forever. So,
absolutely.
Fascinating.
My whole life changed. It changed, and most of it for the worst.
Right.
But I've kind of forgiven, you know, and letting things go a little bit, because, God, I'm almost 90 years old, you see, so it's time to make a change.
Right. Well, I think actually, Bob, I think the last laugh is on them, because you're the one that's been able to make some really good friends through all of this, and a lot of people care about you, so, you know, you're the one that came out on top on this thing, so.
Well, I appreciate that so much. I really do, and I want to thank everybody that stuck with me for the years, all these years and everything. And you guys that believe in me and want to hear what went on, I appreciate that.
I just hope you never get tired of talking about it, Bob.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. Amazing. And that just made my whole podcast career, is having Steinberg and Gimlin on the same show. My head's just like exploding now.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. So, Thomas, this has been great. How would you want to go ahead and close down the show?
Roger that. I'm just going to like to shout out to my friend Bob Gimlin and thank him again for coming on Julie's 20th show. We wanted to do something special for the 20th show, and I can't think of any way to top than having Bob on. Sasquatch history.
Thank you very
absolutely
much.
And I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and all the really good feedback I've received from you all. And Thomas and I really appreciate you, and we will be back again next month with another episode of Talking Old Timers with Thomas. Thank you for joining us.
It doesn't mean we're old, Bob.
Okay, thank you.